Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. I've got a very exciting guest, Tammy Whalen Buckler. She has written two books, actually, but her current book is Vibrations, A Psychic Journey. Welcome, Tammy.
Hi, Chris. I'm so excited about sharing some of my psychic experiences. Thank you for inviting me to participate in your program.
Not a problem. It's a great book. I enjoyed reading it. And I actually read the first one that you did. Well, I'm not all the way through the first one, to be totally honest with you, but I just started reading it about 4 days ago. So very interesting.
Great.
Well, tell us a little bit about you so that the listeners here can kind of get a feel for Tammy and how she started in the paranormal and what she's all about.
Okay. I am a psychic, speaker, author of Vibrations, The Psychic Journey. This book is filled with true short stories chronicling the paranormal, psychic, and sometimes haunting events that happened from childhood on. When I approved the final draft of the book for publishing, I remember saying to myself, once you do this, that's it. No turning back. You have just come out of that psychic closet. That was a brave, scary, and life-changing moment for me. And to this day, I am so thankful that I finally took that step towards becoming my authentic self and embracing the beautiful spirit I was meant to be. So perhaps I'll start with how my journey began. I was born with all of my senses fully developed, both physical and psychic. And after a lifetime of hiding who I truly was, I realized that when I die, a lot of my family and friends would not have truly known me. Things were different when I was younger. In my day, oh God, I just sounded old. Anyway, in my day, being psychic meant that you were a witch in league with the devil, evil, scary, a liar, and you should be shunned or worse. I can remember constantly running home from school, barely able to talk through my tears to tell my mother how mean the children were to me. And I'll give you an example. One day I was playing on the swings with a classmate, and that was grade one or two, I think. And I was trying to communicate to him how excited I was that day, that my second me was so out from my body. And today we know it is an aura, but I didn't know that then. And he wasn't understanding what I was talking about. So I tried to show him how to feel his second me, by moving the energy vibrations around him and directing them with his finger towards his forehead. But the more I tried to explain, the meaner he got. And eventually he ran away from me, calling me a crazy witch or something like that. So, of course, today I don't blame the poor kid. I probably traumatized the poor little guy for life. But back then, with the mind of a child, I believed that he was pretending or lying about not knowing what I was talking about. So when he ran away to his friends and they all started looking and pointing at me laughing, I didn't understand why they were all being so mean. And I know it broke my mom's heart to see me come home every day in tears or hysterical because of what was a horrific event to me. So she would tell me over and over again that I shouldn't let others know what I could do. I should hide that part of me from them. And now just try and wrap your little six-year-old head around that statement. I tried to hide it, but I couldn't figure out what part of me was different than them. So to me, everyone could see and feel everything that I could. I wasn't sure what was normal and what was strange. So it took many years of trial and error for me to compartmentalize the normal, acceptable parts of me and the to-be-hidden parts of me. I even remember sitting on her lap sobbing, telling her that I felt different than my brothers and sister and that I didn't come from the same place as them. I must have come from Mars. In fact, with you just reading the book, you would have noticed in my dedication to Mum in the book, I even thanked her for raising her child from Mars. I really wasn't prepared for the response once this book came out. Yes, coming out of the psychic closet did start my journey home to my authentic self, but unbeknownst to me, it was to act as a catalyst to others who found themselves in a similar position. There was an outpouring of support and emails received from people thanking me because after reading my book, they found the courage to embrace their own psychic abilities without shame or guilt, or just reaching out to let me know that one or more of the short stories confirmed something they experienced or were struggling with.
Well, that's a very good thing, actually, to bring up, and I didn't mean to cut you off there,
Tammy,
but it's a very, very good thing for listeners to know. I know it took me a very long time to come out about my story. I'm sure, like you're saying, it took you a very, very long time to come out because you get scared. The first thing that you think about is, oh, my gosh, you know, people are going to see me as weird. People are going to be afraid of me. You know, so it's a good thing to know that people like you are out there because I know if I wouldn't have found people similar to you, and I know a lot of other people, it's not just me, it's yourself, it's me, it's everybody out there. If we don't find people like you or other people that can relate, then we kind of feel lost.
Absolutely.
So let's continue. Okay. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I think that's a very great thing to bring up, though.
Well, thanks, Chris. And it's so true. And a lot of us, maybe even yourself, you were raised by somebody who was just trying to protect you, saying, shh, you know, don't talk about it. Well, you know, after all my rambling, my book, Vibrations, A Psychic Journey, is filled with true short stories. And it actually chronicles my life and experiences from childhood up. So before I continue and share some of the stories, I think I should explain my understanding of the psychic senses, because I think it's a little different for everyone. But when you break it down to the basics, just as an example, I've often been asked, do you see dead people? You know, like in the movie. So I say yes, and I try to explain my understanding as to why some people see ghosts and others not. So I personally believe that ghosts or spirits are always around us, but not all ghost energy vibrates strongly enough for a person in this physical realm to be aware of it. So I guess I should first explain what I mean when I say vibrations. For example, let's say most people open their eyes and see a butterfly. I open my eyes and not only see the butterfly, but I see the airspace surrounding it vibrating. It's sort of like the displacement of air you can see with your physical vision. When you look at really hot concrete, you'll see the air rising above it, sort of shimmering. This is what I see around everything, you know, more or less to different degrees, since everyone and everything has its own energy vibration. So this is part of my psychic sense of vision. Some people are just more aware because their psychic senses are more developed than others. Since childhood, I have been aware of my duplicate senses, but at the same time, I thought that everybody utilized both sets of senses at the same time. So in short, I believe for each physical sense, there is a correlating psychic sense, and I can give you some examples. Just it'll help understand a couple of the stories I'm going to share with you. So let's say the correlating psychic sense to physical sight would be clairvoyance. To hearing would be clairaudience. Touch would be clairsentience. Conscious knowing, like your common sense, that would be claircognizance. And then smell and taste would be clairalience and clairgustance. There's more, but those are the main ones. So some people use them all at once, and some just use a few here and there. I think the more senses you use, the more sensitive you are to both the physical world and the psychic world. As for me, it really depends on the spirit. Sometimes I can even smell them. You know, a perfume, cigar smoke, body odor. It isn't as a physical smell, it's experienced through my psychic sense of smell, which is really acute. So when you think about it, ghosts don't have a body, so why can I smell the body odor or perfume? Well, I believe some of them actually try to communicate through what I call phantom smells. Here's an example. A few months ago, my psychic senses were assaulted by the really strong smell of beer breath. I mean, this was drunk, rotten beer breath. And it has, for personal reasons, always made the bile rise into my throat. So this spirit presence didn't bother me. It was the odor that he used to identify himself that I found repulsive. And science has proven that scent and memory are very tightly connected. So it only makes sense that certain odors can help identify an entity, such as a loved one's favorite perfume or the scent of tobacco. Chris, I think so many people are afraid of ghosts, and it's probably because of the horror movies out there. And granted, I've had a few nasty experiences myself, but for this show, I thought I'd share the lighter side of ghosts and spirits, since they really have gotten kind of a bad rap. Should I?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the show's all about. People a lot of times think that ghosts are not the best things in the world because of television and media, but reality is that's not really the case, so absolutely.
Okay, well, here's an example of my experience with a pesky spirit. I was out on a business lunch with one of my favorite clients, and I became aware that a female spirit was hovering over my right shoulder. And since at that time I didn't publicly acknowledge, especially in business, that I was a psychic, or that sometimes I saw or felt dead people, I wasn't about to do so in front of my client. So in the unspoken way of communicating, I gently asked her to leave. What a pesky little old lady. She bugged me incessantly throughout the lunch like a nasty mosquito that keeps buzzing in your ear. Her energy kept drawing my attention to this exquisite ring that my client was wearing. And as she continually drew my attention to that ring, she repeated the name Mary over and over and over. You get the picture. As hard as I tried to ignore her, I guess I wasn't doing a great job of it physically, you know, hiding my annoyance. My client, when I looked up, was just staring at me, and he had this puzzled look on his face. That spirit mosquito thing, I just finally broke. I blurted out that I loved his ring, and I asked him where he got it. And he said it was his grandmother's ring. And before I could stop myself, I blurted out, was her name Mary? And I remember thinking, oh, crap, darn mosquito spirit. I was ticked off with her. Anyway, I won't ramble on with the conversation that followed, but I'll share that he told me that indeed her name was Mary and that they had a very special bond while she was alive. And I shared a few feelings that she was passing through me. And he shared wonderful stories about her. So much for not revealing I was a psychic, but I blame it all on that pesky little mosquito spirit. So there, that's not a scary spirit. That was actually, you know, something that ended up being a positive for everybody involved. Uh-huh. Now, I have another one about a haunted house. But this one, it's not about a really scary haunted house, at least not for me. So I've chosen this one because the ghost was actually a funny one and really quite the brat. I was 15 or 16, and my mother asked me to join her and visit a house that she was thinking about renting. The moment we arrived at this big old house and entered the foyer, I felt like it was magical because I could feel a comforting energy surrounding me. And it was as if it was tasting my spirit. I don't know how else to explain it. We explored the rooms on the main level, and as we entered the living room, I just shivered with excitement, knowing that we had to rent that house. And I felt like it wanted me there. So at one point, I was left alone in that large living room, which being empty kind of echoed, you know, like singing in the shower. my eyes were drawn to a big stone fireplace, and I remember feeling that there was something there communicating with me. And although I didn't actually hear or at the time understand what was being said, I know that the message was encouraging me to stay. And I remember how the big room had this window that I walked over to, and because of that echoing thing, I started singing Bridge Over Troubled Water. I remember the name of that song. And my voice at the time was just magical. I always felt like it was my special gift from heaven, sort of my superpower that could stop people in their tracks. So I think that's what like really got its attention. And as I sang, I could sense the presence of it standing behind me and communicating to me in its way that it was enjoying my song. And I could feel the vibrations of like deep emotion and love. And after I was finished singing, I walked towards the alcove that Mom said she'd make into my bedroom. And I could feel that ghost person following me. And he continued to follow me all throughout my explorations of that house. And then weeks later, we're packing and getting ready to move. I knew that that house was occupied by a spirit, but I wasn't afraid. If anything, I felt that I would be safe and loved and protected in that home. So my sister and her family moved in a couple weeks before we did. And shortly thereafter, she confided in me that there was something strange happening in her bedroom. She said that during the night, she could see a light coming from under the closet door. And when she would get out of bed and open the door, there was no light to be seen. Then she'd close the door, she'd get back into bed, and again, she'd see a light coming from the crack at the bottom of the door. So the next day, we explored the closet, and we found the entrance to the attic up above. So she surmised this was the answer to the mysterious light. It had to be coming from the attic somehow. And that was the way of it. I mean, always writing these things off as coincidence, always finding a way to justify events in a rational and sane manner. Of course, I knew better. I already knew that there was something there, but I didn't want to scare her by sharing what I knew about the house. And months later, there were times when I would enter that same room and I'd pick up my little niece from her crib. And she'd be babbling away as if she was talking in the empty room. And I remember resting her little head on my shoulder and feeling that familiar shiver as she'd stretch and she'd strain to see something behind me that, well, wasn't visibly there. And no matter which direction I'd face her, she'd strain to see that something. And then she'd giggle and she'd gurgle, as if somebody was talking to her. Now, my room, it was on the main level, and it was the alcove, and it was perfect. It had windows facing the front of the street. We were able to separate my room from the living room with these gorgeous, rich red velvet curtains. And the room was small, but it comfortably fit my double bed and bookcase. And I'm describing this because of some of the events that happened, and you'll be able to look back and get a visual. And off of my bedroom, there was a door that opened into another small room that was used as a mini library. So as time went on, I was treated to many unusual communications from my invisible friend, the ghost. For example, if I was going to be late for work, I would be rudely awakened by my alarm clock coming off the bookcase and landing beside me with a thump. I mean, it never hit me, but would effectively remind me to get out of bed and prepare for work. And some nights I'd watch and wonder as my red velvet drapes would open from the center and close again on their own. And when I told Mom about that, she checked for drafts from that small library, and she suggested perhaps I'd left the door to that room open, which created a draft moving the curtains. You know, I find it amazing how people can find a justification for the abnormal so that they can live with the sensible answers. I mean, come on, really? Mom had put up with her little child from Mars for 16 years by that time and still needed to write off the strange and wonderful things I experienced as just coincidence.
Do you feel that you run into that a lot because of the standards of paranormal investigation today? I know a part of the job of investigators, and don't get me wrong, guys, when you hear this as listeners, I know a part of their job is to debunk everything possible. But a lot of times I've heard from other psychic mediums, so I'm going to simply ask you the same thing. Do you feel that that can also be a roadblock to the abilities and the stories and the things that you do?
I don't know how to answer that, Chris, because when I was younger, absolutely, you know, but now with the confidence that I have regarding my paranormal experiences, I don't have the same roadblocks as I did then.
Well, confidence is a lot of it, and investigators actually know that. It's not that many investigators are opposed against using psychic mediums. That's a false presentation. Of course, yes, you're going to have some skepticism in the natural investigator that hasn't experienced a ghost yet. Once you experience a ghost out there in the field, it's kind of hard to be skeptical.
It's so true, Chris.
But once you get a feel for, and a part of that, this is why I say that, a part of that, once you get a feel for seeing those ghosts, using a medium that has actual gifts can be very useful because you pick up on things that there's no way we can do when we go in there. I mean, yes, the equipment is nice. And yes, if a ghost feels like communicating on a piece of equipment or understands that piece of equipment, you might get lucky. But when a medium is there, a lot of times you get answers that there's no way you could find on your own. Or you could find it, but it's going to take months or years of research to do.
Absolutely.
If that makes any sense. That's why I asked that question, because I wanted a personal opinion. I've spent time with mediums before, but I've never had a chance to ask them in detail much about that.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, there are mediums, and there are psychics that aren't mediums. Or there are psychics like me who have all of those gifts intertwined into one, and I don't necessarily see all the time a total physical body. Sometimes I just see shimmers. Sometimes I just feel cold, you know. Whereas a medium can probably see, I think, the true full spirit most of the time. So there's all different talents in that spectrum of psychic abilities.
Now, do you feel that most people are possibly born with these abilities and then some develop them, some just choose to ignore them, and some just don't pay attention to it?
Yeah, absolutely. And some block them off because they're told to as children and they've had bad experiences and traumas or whatever. They'll actually block them out.
Well, I've seen that. Like you said earlier, a lot of times growing up, I lived in a haunted house. Everybody knows that. I won't get into a lot of detail here about it because the show's more about learning about you. But you do run into the fact that your parents, their parents' parents live in specific ways. And a lot of times that is to just simply ignore or avoid this. You either hear one of two things. Oh, it's make-believe, honey. Don't worry about it. It's all in your imagination. Or that's the devil's work.
Absolutely. And just imagine poor little me. I mean, we were a very strict, devout Roman Catholic family. My brother was in a seminary to be a priest, and I was supposed to be the nun. Hello. Talk about roadblocks.
I can certainly imagine. My mom came from a religious family. We didn't grow up in religion ourselves, but there was still that sense of, hey, you're just not supposed to talk about this. And I've heard it thousands of times from other people, so it's good to get your opinion on it. Well, tell us a little bit more about your book and your stories, and then as we go, eventually I'll if you're in the middle of the story, please, I apologize ahead of time, but if we get down to the last few minutes, I'll cut you off so that they know where to find the stories and your website and so forth. But I know it's a fascinating couple of books, actually, so far from the first one I'm reading, and I read the second one first. I guess I should have read the first one and then the second one, but they're both very beautiful books.
Well, I'll continue with that same house because there were some really funny instances that happened there, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alrighty. So my fiance ended up renting a room in that house from my mom to help out. And one day he invited his brother and girlfriend over to stay for the night. And I offered them my bedroom. without thinking that anything would happen. And they lasted 1 hour in that room before coming out with a repacked suitcase saying they had to leave. And they told us how the bookcase would move, the curtains would open and close. And the final straw was when the alarm clock left the bookcase and landed directly on the brother's girlfriend's stomach. That ghost was such a brat. And I know I was laughing while they were telling me about this. And there was nothing I could say to get them to stay. And that visit would actually prove to be the last time they ever came over to our house. And that night I had a stern chat with that entity, but I got a feeling that he was just laughing and thought it was a big joke. You know, you just get a feeling from them. Sometimes they don't communicate with words. And a year down the road, my mom decided to have a friend of hers move in. And she offered the lady my room to stay with me. I didn't like the idea because I knew something was going to happen, right? There was trouble brewing on the horizon. My ghost friend was a little territorial and possessive, so I wasn't sure how Casper, the friendly ghost, would react to another person in my room again. So Mary moved into the house, and sure enough, she was treated with some disturbing nights with the antics of my invisible friend, and he pulled the same pranks he did with my fiancé's brother. I explained the situation to her, and she was pretty good until one day she got out of bed to go into the living room. And she yelled out for me to come and help her. And when I bolted out of bed, I saw she was frozen in place. She said she tried to pass, but her midriff impacted with something invisible that was blocking her from moving between the couch and the chair. And she told me when she tried to walk past the two pieces of furniture that it felt like somebody had placed their legs on the arms of the furniture, blocking her from moving forward. And I was tired and cranky, and I knew what was going on. So I just told my invisible friend to cut it out so I could go back to bed. And as soon as I did that, Mary was able to take a shaky step forward and run up to the bathroom. I just remember, you know, shaking my head, going, oh, for God's sake, would you stop it? I think maybe I'll go on to the next story, because wow, does time ever fly? I've got another short story. Just to get away from ghosts, this is more about guardian angels and spirits. And there is a difference, you know, between these.
Absolutely.
So I call these experiences waking visions or messages from the other side. So one of the darkest periods of my life, and I'm not going to expand on that too much, but my daughter was temporarily living with her father. And I remember going to bed early one night, just hoping, you know, to go to sleep so that this living nightmare I was in would just swallow me into another world. And I looked around my room, only to be reminded of my sweet child, who was, in my mind, reflected in these beautiful posters I had on my wall. I love those posters. They depicted a fantasy of mother and child in each design. And my favorite was of a mother and a child standing on a cliff top with white lacy dresses, dancing in the wind, long blonde curls of the mother wrapping the child. Gee, I'm recalling the story and I can literally see that poster again. It's been ages since I've seen it. Anyway, I remember laying my head on my pillow, hoping that sleep would come really quickly. But very soon after I lay down, I felt as though some presence had come into the room. So I reached the nightstand to turn on my lamp, and there at the end of my bed, a young girl about 12 years old stood. And even with the light on, she was solid as a real child. She said nothing, but she looked at me with those deep, deep eyes, and I thought I'd be pulled right into them. And I lay very still, watching her expression and wondering what this vision was all about. I remember thinking, perhaps I was just dreaming of this girl. So I closed my eyes and I lifted the covers over my head, thinking that, you know, she may just disappear. But I could still feel her presence at the foot of my bed. And I peeked over the covers and I saw she was still there. But now she had my favorite poster in her hands. And she slowly started to rip it in half. And the sound, Chris, it was so loud it echoed throughout my room, like loud enough to make my body vibrate with its intensity. and she riveted her eyes to mine, trying to relay a message I wasn't able to hear. But her eyes were so sad. They seemed to be screaming at me, like, why? Help, pay attention. The ripping sound continued until the poster was left in two pieces, and she let it drop to the floor. And I can't possibly find the words to describe the look on that little girl's face. It wasn't anger or fear. It was just profound. And the message was clear enough. I needed to bring my daughter home. So I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew I had to bring my daughter home. So I watched, and the young girl began to shimmer, you know, like that vibration I tried to tell you about. And she slowly started to dissolve in front of my eyes until she was gone. And I looked over to the wall, and that poster was still there, and it wasn't in pieces on the floor. And the little girl was gone. And I'll tell you, I was shaken to my core. So I remember, as I was starting to recover from this incident, I reached over to the nightstand to turn off my lamp. And closing my eyes, I just kept repeating that this was only a dream, none of this actually happened, it was only a dream. And as if in answer to this statement, a loud crashing sound ripped through my bedroom. And I'll tell you, I bolted upright, you know, grasping at my covers. And I quickly turned my lamp on again, and I saw that my favorite poster of mother and child had now actually fallen off the wall. It was the same poster that that spectral child at the end of my bed was holding just a few moments previously. Uh-huh. So after that happened, I just acknowledged that it was a lesson, which was received loud and clear. It was not a dream. So I believe now that this was my daughter's guardian angel, making sure that I not only received her message, but that I wouldn't excuse it away as a dream or forget it. Now, that was a really interesting experience. I think maybe this one, we've got time. I'd like to share a story about one of my precognitive dreams, because another of my gifts from birth is the foreknowledge of future events. And at times they come to me as waking visions, and other times they come in my dreams. These dreams can play like a movie, real to life, and at other times they play out as, well, the same type of thing, but symbols replace actual items and things in the dream, and eventually I'll have to translate them. So the following future dream was experienced as a symbol dream, and I remember I woke up and I was completely soaked and drained with this one. It was powerful. It wasn't a clear future dream, but it was full of different symbols. There were two coffins laid out in front of me. One coffin was made of the most beautiful wood I've ever seen. It was rich and polished, and it glowed from within as if it were itself alive. And within the coffin, I could sense the body of someone from the royal family. And then the other coffin was made of an iridescent pearl-like material, and it glistened. And it teased my eyes. I mean, it was so beautiful, but these pulsating colors would disappear when I looked at them directly. So it held the essence of someone so beautiful and holy that even in death, they radiated such spirit that my soul was filled with love. That's all the only way I can explain it. And I knew this dream was powerful and that it was a future dream. So I felt I needed to share it with someone quickly before I lost it. So the moment I got to work, I pulled aside my coworker and I relayed the dream to her so it wouldn't be forgotten. And knowing that this was one of the most powerful symbol dreams I had ever experienced, I let her know that I felt this one had like a timeline. I was pretty sure that this event was going to start to unfold within a couple of weeks. And so we chatted about the dream. And I shared as best I could the textures, scents, and feel of the dream, because they are very rich dreams. And I knew that two people were about to die. And I also felt that these two people must be connected in some way for them to both be in the same dream. So after the initial dream, I felt more and more drained when I would awaken each morning. And I don't remember dreaming of this incident again. Maybe I did. I mean, who knows? But the event itself seemed to be sucking strength and energy out of me. And I don't know why it attached itself to me, since I was pretty sure that someone of the royal family and someone that holy didn't run the same circles that I did. But anyway, it ended up my confidant wasn't as close-mouthed as she promised. And my dream ended up on the lips of most of the people in the office. So within the week, some of the gals were asking me for more information. And even though it would only make sense that this premonition was about, like, the Queen Mother, I felt that it was another younger member of the family at that time. Part of the dream recall was that wailing would be heard and felt across the world. And although the Queen Mother would definitely be missed, I didn't think her passing would be as shocking because of her age. And nor would it have the same powerful mourning and sense of loss that this royal was about to leave globally. The loss of this person would be tragic and shocking to everyone, not just to those that followed the royal family. So to shorten this story, it was on a Friday night. I let the gals at the office know it was almost over, and I could feel that the event would happen over the weekend. And then Sunday night, I got a call at home from one of my coworkers saying that she and her friends were out for the evening when she heard that Princess Diana had died in a horrific car accident. And of course, somewhere inside, I knew that the event had already happened, because I could feel a calm that had come over me hours earlier. This energy drain that I felt had stopped. And I felt as if this puzzle had come together. I remember the strange feeling I got when I repeated the wailing part of the dream. And being a symbol dream, it now made sense, because it was referring to Diana, Princess of Wales. I mean, it's the way my brain works, I guess. When I showed up at the office on the Monday, I really did feel a tremendous burden had been removed from my heart. And the weight of the world had been lifted. But unfortunately, I was greeted by a few coworkers who jokingly made the sign of the cross with their fingers and waved them in front of my face. And yeah, it's just the type of thing you put up with if you're silly enough to trust someone to keep a secret about your psychic abilities. But anyway, I shrugged it off, because this was too strong a happening to allow silly people to make me feel bad about receiving this kind of a gift. I did let them know that the second person in the beautiful white coffin would die within a week or two, because the dream did seem to have a timeline. And Mother Teresa had actually passed away 6 days later, and all the pieces sort of fell together. And it was years later I found out that Mother Teresa and Princess Diana did meet in person, and they did have a connection where they were joined in this humanitarian event. So there must have been a special spirit bond between them, because I can't think of any other reason why both of them would have been in my dream like that. So anyway, that's that story. And I can share one more story that really encompasses a lot of different psychic gifts and ability, like all in one. I think this one might be a good one to share with your listeners. So I'll start with the compulsions. It started like with a typical day working at the office, and I decided to read a newspaper during break, leafing through the pages. This is a boring part, so I'll try and get through it fast, right? But I kept reading through the paper, and all of a sudden, British Columbia, there was a travel ad, and it just seemed to highlight and flash in my vision for a second off one of the pages. And then I kept reading through the paper, and another BC for British Columbia related story flashed off the page. Next day it happened again, and then I'd hear something on the radio about BC. But every time that happened, it was just a little brighter, you know. It wasn't something normal. You could tell that this was sort of like a message, because it left a light tingling in my body when it happened. And over the next week or two, this place continued to stand out to me, both physically and mentally. And I knew that some sort of message was trying to get through, but I had no idea how intense it was about to become. So I needed to share this message with someone else. And I think a lot of psychics go through this. You know, when they can share this kind of experience, it validates the authenticity of what they're going through. It really does make you feel better about yourself.
Well, yeah, so it'd be a lot like a haunted experience, actually, where you end up doing that. The more people you talk to that have had unique experiences, the more it validates you're not some insane person like some people might think you are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why it's really important, too. So I'm sorry, I've got a frog in my throat. So I met up with my mom and her friend, and I let them know what had been going on, and that it was almost all-consuming, even to the point that I started cutting out the ads and articles about BC and pinning them up on my office wall. And I know that sounds like something from, I don't know, there was an alien movie and it was in there, but I didn't know what it all meant. However, I was pretty sure that something life-changing was about to take place, and it was going to happen in British Columbia. And the only family member I could think of that could possibly be the reason for these psychic messages was an aunt who lived out in Kelowna, BC. And my mother and her friend said, give her a call and make sure everything's okay. So I called her, and to my delight, everybody was fine and doing well. And I remember telling her, I just called to say I love you. So you may wonder why, you know, I wouldn't tell her about the warnings. And that's something I can't explain to you. Something stops you. Not all the time, but sometimes it just doesn't allow you to share it. So I felt better after my phone call, and I hope the incidents would calm themselves down. But the more I tried to ignore them, the more I'd break into sweats, feel sad, exhausted, and I needed a break. I had a feeling I was going to head out to BC to my aunt's place in Kelowna. And how would I explain that? I'd go like, sure. I know you said everything was okay, but I just thought I'd pop over 3,000 miles across the country to make sure it was true. Anyway, by now my secretary and employees, they knew some of the story about what I was going through. And they knew more about that strange part of me than even my family did. And it was Friday, and I was talking to my secretary, one of the salespeople, about British Columbia and the incidents. And I told them I had a feeling it was about to come to its head, and I may not be in the office on Monday. If I was correct, I'd find myself on a plane to BC over the weekend. I felt like someone was about to die, or something bad was going to happen, and there's absolutely nothing I could do about it. And as we were talking, I remember standing in front of a pair of sliding glass mirror doors. And suddenly, I felt myself being flung backwards into the glass, and I slid down the mirror door, and I hit the floor, and a painful shudder just sort of rolled through my body from my head to my toes. One entire side of my body was on fire with pain. I remember screaming in agony and just sitting on the floor panting. And when I finally collected myself, I looked up, and both of my employees were looking at me, and they got me up and into a chair, and I told them that this nightmare and obsession was almost over, and I let them know that I'd be driving up to a cottage, another family member's cottage in Parry Sound for the weekend, but I had the feeling that I'd be in BC by Monday. I picked up my daughter, and on our way to that cottage, my daughter and I both felt like we had to stop the car and look up at the sky, and it just had a strange pull to it, and she pointed out a cluster of stars saying they had a message for her, and I remember thinking, damn, I hope I could say that on
here. You're fine. You're perfectly fine.
Thank you. I didn't want her to suffer the psychic things that I did. But it was obvious that she'd already been drawn into the event. And I also had a feeling I had to get to that cottage as soon as possible. There was some sort of an urgency there. And when we did finally arrive at my aunt's cottage, one of my cousins came outside to meet us at the car. And I could tell there'd been a tragedy just by looking at his face. And he was about to tell me something that I already knew, that my aunt Shirley or one of her children had died. But before he could say a thing, my daughter got out of the car and she called out Gunter's name. And that was the name of one of my cousins out in BC. So he told us that they received a phone call informing them that cousin Gunter had passed away. And I was told he fell off a cliff in the mountains of BC earlier that day. And I immediately flashed back to the sliding mirror door incident. And I knew exactly when that happened. So the next morning, my mother and another of my aunts joined me. And we took a plane to BC. And after arriving, my time was primarily spent with my cousin named Ben. I love that guy. While my mom and other aunts spent most of their time with the rest of the family. And Gunter's spirit was everywhere, Chris. Throughout the heaviness of the time spent there, well, with people mourning, I remember his spirit as being bright and happy, childishly flitting here and there, and pushing me to let Ben know he was there. And Gunter wasn't about to let me off the hook. I'm telling you, he went through too much for the past 2 weeks. So I remember sitting on a piano bench, and I was chatting with my cousin Ben, who was sitting on one of the steps to the stairs. And I could see the shimmering outline of Gunter's spirit descending the stairs and pass right through Ben. And the moment he did that, Ben's eyes widened and he looked at me as if I knew what was going on. And in answer to his question, I told him Gunter was there and he wanted Ben to feel his presence so he could hear him. And Ben went up to his room where I told him all about the events that led up to my being there. The next day, and this was the magical part of it, Ben and I went off on our own for a while. And the following hours, I swear, changed both Ben and my lives forever. I mean, I may have been in tune and aware of the spirit realm, but I have never shared an experience this intense with someone in our physical world. I'd asked Ben to take me for a sightseeing tour, and he was driving, and we were getting closer and closer to the mountain that I was fairly sure was a place of Gunter's death. And at one point, Ben said he had no idea why he was heading in that direction, as he didn't want to go near that place, and I let him know it was okay. You know, it was a compulsion, and that I felt we were both about to experience something magical that night, that it was supposed to be. And there was an energy that arrived in the car, and it was shimmering like that heat rising from the pavement I told you about. And I turned to look at Ben, but I saw fear, and I knew he was feeling this energy as well, but he wasn't used to it the way I was. And we continued on down the road, and the mountains on our left-hand side, and then it happened. I could see these dancing lights on the mountainside just down the road, and I watched as its shimmer and intensity changed color. It flowed up and down one spot of the mountain, and this was it. This is where Gunter had given up his physical body. I just knew it. And as we got closer, the light show continued. I mean, the streamer of light would dive from one spot of the mountain. It would cascade down to another spot lower down. And it had a colorful tail like that of a comet. And the closer we got, the more brilliant and intense the show became. And now I could actually feel like music being a part of this show. And listening to the joyful vibration as it shimmered up, around, and down the mountain. And Ben, after he pulled the car over, we just sat there and he watched silently. And I remember praying that he was seeing the same thing I was, sort of selfishly hoping that he could see the world the way I do, just to confirm that I'm not crazy as I sound, even to myself sometimes. But beyond hope, I looked at Ben and asked if he could see the light. And without looking at me, he kept moving his head in tune to that energy movement that I was seeing. So he was seeing the same thing. I just knew it. I even asked him to share with me exactly what he was feeling, and he did, and he knew it was his brother. And that show continued for about 5 minutes, It felt a lot longer, but Gunter was dancing and singing his goodbyes, letting Ben know how wonderful everything was and how happy he was. And Gunter's spirit was so playful and full of joy, I felt privileged to have been drawn to share it. And I also came to the realization that this was not only a gift from Gunter to Ben, but it was his gift to me as well. And to have experienced this miracle with a witness, just it made me cry. I was so appreciative. I remember I just couldn't stop the tears from rolling down my cheeks. So
amazing stories, Tammy. I will tell you a little bit about Tammy, just so that the listeners know where to find her. We're speaking with Tammy Whalen Buckler. She is author of Vibrations: A Psychic Journey. Tammy has several areas you can find her book. If you're interested in it, you can go to bookbaby.com. Vibrations: A Psychic Journey. You can also find her on Amazon.com if you type in Vibrations: A Psychic Journey, or you can visit her at her website, which is www.tammybuckler.com. Paranormal Truth and Reality will be updating their website here in the next week with an interactive chat room, as well as links to BBS Radio Station 2, so that you can actually be a little bit more interactive. And Tammy's information will be in the addition to the books, so that you have links to find her as well. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Tammy. I just wanted to make sure that here in the last 5 minutes or so, everybody knew where to find you. And really read a little bit more about some of your amazing stories, because I know we could go on about this all evening and if we had the time. And I love listening to your stories. I love listening to everybody's stories. I think it's amazing when you meet other people in the paranormal and hear that the world is not quite as small as it seems.
It's actually a beautiful, wonderful world, and it's a shame that for hundreds of years we've sort of, shut this off, and for whatever reason, I hope these true stories brought some smiles and some understanding for both you and your listeners, and again, I want to thank you for this opportunity to share a few of my experiences. It's quite overwhelming. Thank you.
It was our pleasure. You're more than welcome to come back anytime. And I think you brought up some very valid points as we're closing the show. One of the points that you brought up is when you're first coming into the paranormal in one way, shape, or form, your eyes do open up. When those eyes open up, you tend to see the world in a different light all around you. From the colors to the things that you see out of the corners of your eyes, now coming into the front of your eyes. And a lot of times that makes you feel out of place, crazy, or insane. So that the listeners know out there, you're not. You're not alone. There are other people that have seen it. And perhaps if you speak to one or two people like Tammy somewhere along the line, not only can you understand that a little bit more, but you can get a feel for whether you have these gifts, since a lot of people do. So we certainly appreciate you coming on and taking the time, Tammy. I know that you're about to go on vacation, so it was kind of one of those things that I'm glad that we actually had the chance. It's been very exciting listening to you tonight.
Thanks, Chris, and it was an absolute pleasure.
Well, we will go ahead and end it here in Paranormal Truth and Reality, just so that everybody understands. And I apologize, it looks like somebody did not shut off my office phone. So we got a little bit of tunes going on. I apologize, Tammy. Usually I have everything silenced here in the office in the recording studio, but my secretary must have forgot to shut it off. So I apologize to you and the listeners. You have been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. And in closing tonight, I want everybody to understand, as you heard from Tammy and the guests every single week, paranormal is always the truth and the reality that you should concentrate on. Next week, we will be talking hopefully to two guests. We're going to be spending a little bit of time with Kay Kemplin talking about her story, and we're going to have a researcher, Carl Bland, on the line. Carl Bland has actually been a researcher for over 23 years. He has some amazing things I'm sure he can share with us. In the meantime, we'll let you go, and it's been a pleasure talking to you. We'll talk to you next week.